Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Hallelujah.
traditional music from Nigerian singer-songwriter Babatunde Olatunji from his Healing Rhythm Songs and Chants CD. That special song was entitled Nini, an invocation to Mother Earth. Babatunde wrote that prayer song on the 20th anniversary of Earth Day. I've had the privilege to get to know Mr. Olatunji before we passed into the spirit world from our participation at a special annual gathering known as the Prayer Vigil for the Earth. This ceremony occurs every Wate Baga Gishish moon, more commonly known as September. The prayer vigil takes place in the traditional homeland of the Piscataqua Indian Nation in what's now called Washington, D.C. The prayer vigil for the earth, started by Native American elders, welcomes all peoples to share a sacred fire and prayers for the well-being of all life. There are many fine spiritual paths represented at the prayer vigil each year, and I encourage our worldwide listeners to visit the Prayer Vigil's website for further information. Their site is www.oneprayer.org. Once again, the Prayer Vigil for the Earth website is www.oneprayer.org. Ashkwe greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. In today's program, we share a conversation with my African friend, Matthew Owatoki. Matthew is here in Southwest Florida for an environmental internship in completion of his master's degree. We both share similar concerns about environmental protection and conservation-based rural development, very important needs in his country of Nigeria and throughout the Third World. I met Mr. Owatoki in an Earth Day event on the campus of Florida Gulf Coast University, where I lecture and serve on the Board of Advisors of Florida Gulf Coast University's Center for Environment and Sustainability Education. Matthew was sitting at the information table of the Caloosahatchee River Citizens Association, the River Watch Conservation Organization he was working for. Yad Kiddushi Native Center has partnered with this fine group in previous campaigns to protect the region's watershed in coastal estuaries. I would like to now welcome Mr. Matthew Owatoki to Wolf Mountain Radio. Matthew, my first question is, what are your thoughts about the state of our planet, especially since today is the 35th anniversary of Earth Day, and we are here in an Earth Day event? Now, in the 21st century, the world is faced with even more critical problems. Issues such as global climate change, deforestation, desertification, poverty and hunger, pollution of the air and oceans, loss of biodiversity, collapse of marine fisheries, increasing population, and unsustainable development are many examples. This is especially serious in the Third World, like Africa, where you are from. So what are your thoughts and comments about the future of Mother Earth?
Thank you very much. That's a very important question, and one thing I discovered is that 35 years ago when this Earth Day thing started, and now it's, I believe that here in America there have been a lot of changes, I mean, transformations have occurred as regard the orientations of people about conservation of earth resources and the environment. But like you rightly mentioned, in the developing world the case is different, and it's quite appalling to note that people don't really pay serious attention on the environment. I mean, you look at the pollution rate is appalling. You look at the river bodies also are not well catered for. People are not well educated about this development. And sometimes it's like here within the America, I mean, the emphasis focused within the developed countries, and much emphasis not paid to the developing countries. But I believe so much that if the right resources are there, right minds, people educated about the benefit they can tap from these environmental resources, it's going to go a long way to help upgrade their thought, their thinking about what they can tap from the environment as well. You discover sometimes that in some part of this developing world, that where oils are being drilled and all that, they end some of these things in the water body. The aquatic life is endangered. So many things happen. Even the quality of life of the people also is endangered as well, because people are not well nurtured. They are not well, informed about these things. But I believe that with more education and also with the right resources, with the right kind of leadership, and people from the developed world are ready to give a little bit of sacrifice to see how they can also help the developing world, it's going to make the third world a better place, I believe, in terms of these environmental issues. Thank you.
I'm sure you are aware, and as I am, and I'm very happy that this year's Nobel Peace Prize winner, one of the winners, of course, the first woman from Africa, Wangari Maathai, someone who I've had the honor to personally meet several years ago, is also speaking out about conservation in what's now called the Third World. And I agree with you that there are many people in the tropical hemisphere that might not know a lot about pollution and issues of protecting nature. But I also, having lived in different parts of Southeast Asia and what's now called Latin America, I also know that traditional people, tribal people in Africa, for example, have lived sustainably for many, many years, actually hundreds of years, very well. And I see many of the modern-day environmental problems, modern-day agricultural problems, not really a result of people in the Third World, but as a result of what I call colonialism, that many of the multinational corporations that are from America, from Europe, from Japan, for example, don't follow, for example, the code of conduct of multinational corporations, that many tribal people and poor people have been displaced off their traditional homelands to make way for industrial agriculture, plantations. So I would like your comment, if you don't mind, briefly about future development in the Third World, because I'm not sure following the Western model of so-called development is the right way to go. I think it might benefit some of the corporations, but I'm someone who believes that a lot of traditional societies know very well how to live sustainably on their homeland, how to farm, how to fish, how to take care of their environment, but are not necessarily allowed to because some of the governments of these countries are still under kind of neo-colonialism. Would you agree with some of my comments?
Yeah. Like you rightly said, the issue about development, it's something that has to do with, one, the people there, and also their attitude to changes. Change is a constant thing. I mean, definitely you don't want to remain static. You must be a dynamic person. Even as an individual, you must be dynamic in whatever thing you do for you to make progress. And that's what I see also in the developing world. Yeah, people, I mean, you talk about poverty. So many countries in the developing world ravished with poverty. It's quite sad. But sometimes these multinational companies also, they have got portions of the blame. Because they come in, okay, the cheap labor is there, and at the end of the day, the pollution rate also is high. And they do little or nothing to alleviate the pains and the suffering of the people. Like, basically, most of the people in the developing countries, their major occupation is farming. And now, for example, the oil companies, yes, if you end up polluting the soil for them, tell me, how will they be able to go and invite on that land? Again, there's absolute land degradation. So, and it's difficult to reclaim this land, I mean, just by any artificial means, traditional means. Technology must have to come in place to help to reclaim this land. But then most of these people do not have the means to get this technology to see how they can help improve the yield of the land. That's where these multinational companies need to come in. They end up tap those resources and they give little back to the to this community, which is very, very sad. You talk about those that fishermen, the ocean, the resources from there are also affected, and little is being done to see how to compensate these people. That's why at the end of the day, you discover that most of the people in this third world country, they end up fighting back. the swivels. They end up kidnapping these people. Why? Because they feel that they are plundering their resources and they are not giving back anything in return. So I believe, because now even most of the countries where these multinational companies come from, what they are doing in the developing countries, they can't do it there. So there should be a fair level, playing ground to help reduce this. I see it as a menace. People should have the right thinking. Yeah, it's good. You come in, you're establishing your own industries, your own company. You're helping to better the life of the people. But at the same time, you should look at the disadvantage also. You see how you can help alleviate the sufferings and the pain of those people. I mean, sometimes I think it's important you look at the educational aspect. You can help build schools for these people to give back in return. You can help build good roads for these people to give back in return what you're taking from them. And see also how you can help with the technology you're coming with to see how you can increase the productivity of the soil and of the land. So these are things that, they should look, into, because it's very, very important. Of course, no one is stopping multinationals from coming into the developing country, from investing in there. But when they do that also, they should look at the disadvantaged people and see how they can help in their own little way to make life better for them. Thank you.
Yeah, point is well taken, and I agree with you totally. One aspect I haven't mentioned, when you mention the word technology, that scares me a little bit. I am a biologist. I'm actually a professor of forest ecology, and I respect a lot of Western science, but I'm also a Native American indigenous person, and I'm very much concerned that I believe it was Louis Pasteur who once said, the benefits of science are not just for science, they are for humanity. And when right now there's a big push in the world, especially when we're talking about agriculture and food self-sufficiency, to push these hybrid genetic food, so-called improved varieties, genetic engineering, GMOs, genetically modified organisms. And I'm very concerned that many countries of Africa, Asia, and what's now called Latin America are going to be forced into agricultural technologies that, again, might not be a benefit for the majority of the rural poor, but will be for the profits of basically large corporate agribusiness enterprises. And I'm really very much concerned about this this modern technology. I consider it a form of biocolonialism. And I'm talking about this because, as I'm thinking when you were talking, I was listening to the hearings in the U.S. Senate on C-SPAN yesterday, as a matter of fact, when they were talking about the nomination of the U.S. New proposed ambassador to the United Nations, Bolton, and how he will be really the U.S. representative to the U.N., which plays a major role in all these subjects. The U.N. Environment Program, the U.N. Food and Agricultural Organization, UNESCO. And I'm very sad in that I think America and the U.N. is not going to be focused so much on the Millennium Development Goals, but more on private corporate partnerships. And I see this technology with agribusiness as one of the key issues. The appointment of former Assistant Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz to head the World Bank is another example that scares me greatly. I've fought the World Bank for 30 years on a number of their mega development projects, mostly in Southeast Asia, with hydro dam projects that, again, are not for the benefit of rural farmers, but to provide energy for mining and logging industry. So I know I'm asking you to comment on a big subject here, but would you talk a little bit about what let me ask you this, sir. Would you agree that there are serious threats to the use of Western technology in the third world, such as these genetically modified organisms like genetic crops?
Thank you very much. What you really talked about now, I remembered during one of our lectures in school, because I'm a student of food security and natural resources management, and yeah, and it really comes to play now. So whenever I have the opportunity to talk about this, it's always an interesting topic for me. Like presently we know in the world we have over 800 million or more people, impoverished people. And when you look at it, I think majority, the most part of these people are from the third world. Okay. So it's something that I'm very much interested in talking about. And like I said, 800 million people in the world or more are impoverished. Most part, a large number of them from the developing world. And we talk about technology, the carrying over of technology from the developed world to the developing country. But then, talking about the GMO, the genetically modified crops, it's a very, very, very critical issue, sensitive issue also. Because I know that even in Germany, where I study, that there is a ban placed on genetically modified crop from the U.S. And sometimes the third world country, they've been seen as a dumping ground for most of this technology thing. I believe the need for technology for us should be a thing that should have a direct impact on the quality of life of the people. If you're introducing a technology, you should look at the quality of life. How will this technology improve the quality of life of the people? So, like sometimes it depends also on the interest of a particular individual. Like I remember this question you asked was thrown to members in the class, and the best answer that was given was it depends. The people in a particular location may desire that I want this genetically modified crops because maybe there's a deficiency of a particular nutrient that is needed to be upgraded or that is needed to be brought into play in that particular person. But when that need is not there, then I don't see a need for the GMO, because that's something that it's very important to note. But I believe the impulse of technology in most third world country should be a thing that will improve the life of the people. If you bring in a technology, you look at it, will these people benefit or will it also have a negative impact on the life of the people? There have been occasions of some of these things introduced into African countries, and yet it had a negative effect on the health of the people. But people don't want to look at that. They just felt, okay, Africans, we can come in and dump whatever thing we want to dump in there. But it's not to the best advantage. It's not to the best needs of the people. If you want to help the third world country, then it must be a thing that is sincerely done. You have a sincere, direct, need for you to meet in the life of the people. There needs to bring in, like, I believe there's some machineries here that are being used to help improve the yields of crop. They are not there in Africa. Those are the kind of technology we need back home. There are things that you can use to preserve things to help improve the lot of the people. Back in Africa, they are not there. Yeah, Africa is poor because somehow the developed world, they are looking away from the peculiar, because it's a peculiar continent, but they are looking away from peculiarity of their needs. And for as long as this persists, little or nothing will be done. So it's not an issue of maybe the genetically modified crops, or maybe there's no influx of such things, but it should be a thing that will be needed to improve more on the life of the people, the quality of life. Because like now you talk about the environment, the water bodies, sometimes and things to purify the water are not there so much. People are taking this thing, and at the end of the day, their health is being hampered. But I believe so much that when these things are done, when the UN, the United Nations, or developed governments all around the world come to, like what the British Prime Minister is doing, trying to focus the searchlight on Africa, poverty situation, to see how they can help to ameliorate the pains of these people. It will go a long way to help. If other world leaders could come together and look, I mean, straightly into the peculiarity of the problem, I believe with sincere minds, with sincere heart, they would be able to really do something. It really gives me concern because I'm an African, and I look at the situation back home and say, how long will the continent continue this way? Of course, sometimes it's a problem of leadership. We can't run away from that. But I believe there's so much that the developed world can also do to help, I mean, change the situation. Thank you very much.
As we listen now in this Wolf Mountain program to native music, we hear the sacred drum, the voices of our singers, and the footsteps of our dancers. It is the drum that is our heartbeat, and we who sing and dance in a traditional way express our gratitude to the creation and to Kinawantakwisin, to all our relations. We honor our singers and dancers who have kept the songs, and we honor our drummers who know the spirit of the drum. To our drummers, singers, and dancers, keep us strong as we hear the songs from Mother Earth and our Indian nations. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Press, Kinawantakwisin.
está la gente que tú eres mi enamorada.
Traditional music from the Andes Mountains, the band Runa Pacha, sharing an altiplano song from Ecuador. We started off our music set with a Native American round dance song from the drum Blackstone off their Kenyan Records CD, Round Dance Singing. My guest today on Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices is Mr. Matthew Owatoki. Matthew is from Nigeria, Africa. However, he is here in the United States as an environmental intern with the Regional River Watershed Conservation Group, the Caloosahatchee River Citizens Alliance. Our conversation is taking place at an Earth Day event at Florida Gulf Coast University, where I lecture and serve on the Board of Advisors for FGCU Center for Environmental Sustainability Education. Matthew and I share similar concerns for protecting the environment and for the social and economic justice of all peoples of the world. Continuing on with our conversation, my next question again relates to the Third World. Matthew, would you please talk about the situation in less developed countries and sustainable development? What are your thoughts about development in order to improve the lives of millions of people who live on the margins of human existence in poverty and hunger?
Look at the underdeveloped world, the Third World countries. They serve as the people that need the nutrients now, just like a little child, to grow and to get to the level where the developed countries have attained. So I believe so much that there will be, the term international development, it will not be fair to use that when you're talking about developing countries, because many of them, they've been ravaged by war, definitely. Many of them, they've been a lot of setback, in terms of economic advancement and development. Many of them, you look at in terms of technology also, and to create the needed progress that is expected to bring about development. And also, I want to talk about the issue of and the fact that if you're talking about international development, then you have to narrow down to the rural areas. I believe there will be no international development if you do not focus on rural development, because it's just like a nucleus thing. The nucleus and the body, it's just the smallest part, the smallest organ within the body, the nucleus. So now, if you do not focus on the rural area, which serves as maybe the smallest part now in terms of governmental hands, you know, then it will not eventually metamorphose into the international kind of development that is expected. So if the developed world, they are looking at just how to get things done in some other places, building a free trade and relationship with other developed world, then it's not fair, because the developing countries are left at bay. They are not able to really pull up, or I mean, get to the level where these other developed nations have attained. So I believe for there to be a fair judgment in terms of the extent to which we have international development in the world at large, then emphasis must also be focused on rural areas and also the third world countries. Thank you.
You are listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kitichi Native Center. Yat Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their worldviews in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat Kitichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing indigenous communities, work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat Kitichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat Kitichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat Kitichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat Kitichi's Kinunwatakwasi Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Please write us for our catalog of audio tapes available for purchase. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or
If you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum, to contact Yat Kedichi Native Center, write to Yat Kedichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yat Kedichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakusin, to all of our relations.
Wolf Mountain Radio thanks our worldwide listeners for all the letters and emails expressing appreciation for honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Once again, our email address is yatkidishi@earthlink.net. That's yatkidishie at earthlink.net. I want to again thank today's program guest, Mr. Matthew Owatoki, for being on Wolf Mountain Radio. Next week, we continue our conversation with Matthew in Program 2. One of the great pleasures I have as a member of Radio for Peace International's Board of Advisors is mentoring young journalists who intern at the station. I especially enjoy helping them produce RFPI's Progressive News Network, PNN Reports. In today's remaining broadcast time, I want to air a PNN segment about police abuse in what's now called Australia. Sadly, this story is all too common for many Indigenous peoples around the world who are often mistreated by government authorities. We shall conclude today's program with an honor song to Mother Earth from the Aborigine band Nukul Kunjeli. Yat Kedichi's co-director, Betty Hurst, had the opportunity to meet these fine musicians during her last trip down under. The name of the song is Jara, Mother Earth. The CD liner notes on this track is, quote, "This is a song and dance we do to show respect to the Earth Spirit for giving us life, and we remember the most important law of our people. You must only kill living things to survive," unquote. Until the next Wolf Mountain Native Radio, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker, thanking you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Aho, kino I want to talk with sin to all of our relations.
50-year-old orphaned Aboriginal boy committed suicide in a Northern Australia detention centre at the beginning of February. Hear more about this story from PNN's Charlotte Allen.
The World Socialist website reports that Jonah Waramaba died only 5 days before he was due for release from the Dondale Correctional Centre. He was convicted for stealing some felt pens, pencils and other stationery items worth less than $90. The detention prison where Marawamba was imprisoned lies 800 kilometres away from his hometown, Groots Eiland, a town characterised by one of the richest manganese projects in the world, the Genco mine. And yet its inhabitants live in extremely poor conditions. The average life expectancy among Aboriginal people is 20 years less than for non-Aborigines. The week after Waramamba's death, a 20-year-old man from the same community, Jamie Wuramara, was given a 12-month jail sentence for walking into an open shed and eating biscuits. And the Human Rights and Equal Opportunities Commission recently reported the case of an Aboriginal boy who attempted suicide when imprisoned for breaking a window after hearing about the suicide of a close friend. Nearly 150 Indigenous prisoners have died in Australian prisons and police cells over the last 20 years. Although Aborigines constitute only a quarter of the Northern Territory population, they make up 75% of those who have been given compulsory 12-month sentences. In recent years, both Northern Territory, NT, and West Australian, WA, governments have imposed harsh sentencing legislation to protect property rights. These laws give the police the power to harass and penalise young poor people who have committed petty offences. In the Northern Territory recently, an 18-year-old man was imprisoned for 2 weeks for stealing a cigarette lighter worth $2.50. Likewise, a 24-year-old mother was sentenced for 14 days for accepting a stolen can of beer, also worth $2.50. Despite recent cases, the NT Chief Minister, Dennis Burke, has defended government laws and was adamant that there was no relationship between the boy's suicide and his detention. Burke suggested that such, quote, self-destructive behaviour, end quote, was to be expected from an Aboriginal adolescent. Aboriginal civil liberties groups, professional bodies and several organisations have been urging the federal government to change or remove certain aspects of NT and WA laws. Due to public outcry, the government is currently under pressure to override these laws. Notwithstanding, the NT and WA governments have made it clear that they have no intention of backing down and have the same political makeup as the federal government. In fact, the WA government are already planning to introduce harsher sentencing rules for all offences. In the studio today, I'm joined by my guest, Ones Pritzker, a Native American ecologist and journalist. Ones is also a member of RFPI's International Board of Advisors. He works to educate the public about the beautiful cultural lifeways of indigenous peoples throughout the world. Ones is here to share his comments on this story.
Akwe, greetings. Thank you for listening to Radio for Peace International. Aborigines, as all indigenous peoples, consider Mother Earth as sacred. Aboriginal culture, like my Native American society, is based on a spiritual connection to all life. In my Wabanaki language, we say Kinewantakwasin to all of our relations, the animals, the plants, the fish, the marine life, the rocks, the soil. They are part of our family. Aborigines similarly share their relationship with the natural world. We both express this through our clans, a kinship with Mother Earth. For example, the Aborigine clans, kangaroo, emu, and snake. The Aboriginal cultural lifeway is expressed as the dream time, the understanding of our life as human beings as part of the great mystery, as we Native Americans say. Aborigines, as all Native peoples throughout the world, are therefore part of the land from where our tribal nations come from. This is from the beginning of our creation, from the Great Spirit. The coming of Europeans to indigenous homelands, such as what is now called Australia, has been a genocidal colonial assault on sacred lands and tribal communities. White government control over Aboriginal life, destruction of the environment, racist apartheid-like policies, and the imposed poverty on Aboriginal society are some of the reasons for the oppression many Aborigines have suffered and continue to suffer until this day. The death of Jono Warramambra is just one example of many tragedies from the white man's so-called law and order, his so-called civil rule. Whole peoples of the world must express their outrage over the death of Jono Warramambra. We all must express our outrage over all of the colonial and racist forms of violence and oppression that affect Aborigines and affect all indigenous peoples throughout the world. Lastly, we all must learn to love and honor sacred Mother Earth. Again, thank you for listening to Radio for Peace International. Ho, Kinewantakwasin to all of our relations.
Thank you for joining us today, Ones. This is Charlotte Allen reporting for PNN.
All right. Johnson. You are listening to the American Indian Movement's Honoring Song. This is Wolf Mountain Press, a documentary program focusing on Native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Wolf Mountain Press will present the situations facing Indian peoples throughout the world with Native music, poetry, news, and Indian case histories in the struggle to protect Mother Earth and the sacred ways of life of Native peoples.